gentlemen, boys and girls, pets and creatures of every make and model, fans of entertainment, shenanigans alike, welcome back to Legends Podcast. I'm Beef.
I'm Wing.
And I'm John Lobster. 20 years ago, American cinemas were rocked by one of the best overall years in movie history. Now Legends Podcast is celebrating the Legends of 99 all year long. For his sophomore effort, indie director Wes Anderson paired with his Bottle Rocket co-writer Owen Wilson to create Rushmore, a coming-of-age tale about an overachieving underachiever at an elite prep school, the wealthy alumnus he befriends, and the attractive teacher they both fall in love with. The film made the rounds on the festival circuit in 1998 and sold out showings at single theaters in New York and L.A. before going wide in 99. Okay, we're cheating a little here, folks. Winning the Independent Spirit Award and launching Bill Murray into the second phase of his career, capturing Anderson's signature whimsical style and sporting a British invasion influenced soundtrack, Rushmore was a breakout hit that set up a remarkable run for its director over the next decade. But does the film deserve an honorable mention from our hosts, or should it be expelled? Gentlemen.
We should do more of these kind of movies. I'm just saying.
Like indie, weird, artsy-fartsy type stuff?
No, more like big budget, weird, artsy-fartsy type stuff.
Yeah, I mean, so one of the things about Wes Anderson is I wouldn't necessarily say big budget, although they definitely you definitely see him step up the production values as he goes along, but he definitely has his thing, and this movie has those things in it. So if you've seen a Wes Anderson movie before, you kind of know what to expect. I'm curious, Beef, have you seen many Wes Anderson movies?
Probably not. Because they're all I don't deal with the quirky is it was no good.
Okay, so we can count down. Right after this, he does The Royal Tenenbaums, which is kind of his really breakout mainstream hit.
I almost got that confused with this.
Yes, okay.
Because Bill Murray and then the kids and just, right. I don't know, for somewhere in my brain, they got crossed for a minute. And
then continuing.
He's clearly getting the same influence from movie to movie as soon as he meets Bill Murray.
And keeping along with the fish, we have The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, starring Bill Murray. He does Moonrise Kingdom, The Darjeeling Limited, the Grand Budapest Hotel, and his two animated endeavors, The Fantastic Mr. Fox and last year's Isle of Dogs.
He's the one who did Isle of Dogs?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
So,
but look at this streak. This is the kind of streak that Tarantino is gonna have in his life.
I kind of thought we should fudge, because technically this is a film of 1998. It did go wide in about 700 theaters in 99. So if we want to count wide release, but this is kind of like, this sets up Wes Anderson's run in the aughts of several very well-received films that were also commercial successes. And I think to kind of say, like, this is where cinema is going. We're taking basically the early 90s art house film movement, the Sundance kids, and basically like turning it into like we're gonna crib from French New Wave cinema but also do this really kind of whimsical, fun, endearing I don't know, like everything that Wes Anderson does is kind of in this movie, so it's interesting to look at.
I think the big criticism is that you look at this and then you look at 10, 15 years of his career and he keeps repeating kind of the same theme and the same kind of visuals. That's good that he went to animated because all of a sudden he's not restricted by the real world. And clearly this guy has enough imagination to get outside the boundaries of what they can pay for at some point. I mean, this one is, goes on the cheap with $10 million, but
right.
By the time he's doing like Life Aquatic, these movies are $25 million right, endeavor, right. And they're not giving it to Bill Murray.
Right. It's an interesting case. And of course, this is Jason Schwartzman, kind of really his breakout starring role, and he partners with Wes Anderson again, and obviously Bill Murray, who had been known primarily for doing comedy. This is kind of him exploring the dramatic territory that would take him to Lost in Translation and really set him up as a legitimate actor.
He became a fan of, as you were saying earlier, Sundance and that kind of aesthetic. And I think he was kind of bored with movie making by the mid-90s.
I mean, he still does his Garfields and his, I don't know what else he's up to. But he had kind of just done The Man Who Knew Too Little, which is, while it's a film that I truly love, it was kind of like, okay, Bill Murray, you clearly don't have anything new to show us. You're kind of still playing that guy. But then he turns around and does something like this or Lost in Translation. And people are like, oh, Bill Murray can be a serious actor.
I love that the guy that shot this, because let's be honest, this is beautifully shot, went from this to Dogma.
Yeah. I mean, it makes
sense,
though.
The guy was working for Sundance people. Makes a lot of sense. But when you think about where these movies are in the pantheons of 90s movies, you're at two extremes.
Absolutely, yeah. Beef, you mentioned briefly that the quirk didn't work. Do you want to talk us through that?
I mean, it's just this movie failed to grasp me. And every time it started to, it just... I don't know. It was too quirky. It's just too fucking dumb. I mean, it's just as dumb as like Hot Tub Time Machine for me, but I don't know. I
think you feel in these movies, I feel in Hot Tub Time Machine.
Probably. But I don't know. Was I supposed to take any of it seriously? Like his love story
kind of the thing with Wes Anderson is it's everything has like this heightened reality to it. Almost everything is played with comedic timing and setup and payoff. Like, oh, I thought, you know, we're going to meet and I'm going to drop this tree on you. Oh, well, geez, that would have killed me.
Yeah.
Oh, and then you have the whole scene and then he rips the branch off and the tree falls over and you're like, wait, oh, right. But the whole movie is kind of like that.
And Wes Anderson likes to make you cringe.
He does. And a lot of times the main characters of the film are not likable at all, or for most of the movie you don't like them, and then he finds like some little bit of humanity and goes with it.
I mean, this could almost be Office Space, really, because there's no story, really. It's just little bits
it's all about characters,
set up and timing. There's no I mean, it's
but the difference in this is
I had
this
no
one,
fun.
You set no, but you set up the character to explore the character, as in Office Space. You set up the character to explore the comedic timing of its of the character's quirk. So in Office Space, no character really evolved. Yeah, they change a little bit because they kind of have to. This movie gets all the character from one point to another in a very explorative way, and by making you super cringy, because this dude is 15 years old, but he's acting the most adult of everyone, and there's only one person that seems to be like, dude, I'm not going to sleep with you, you're 15 years old, that would be fucking creepy, which the only actor that is in a different movie by choice, I think. That's why she's like the reality grabbing part, but all the rest of the humor is either on comedic timing or extreme case of cringing. So So
yeah, but I mean, if I don't know, if I want a joke, I don't want, always want to wait for it at the end of the shit. Give me a joke. Uh-huh. The timing and setup after a while is like, well, okay, start the fucking movie already.
Right. And there's also a lot of, like, the dialogue is very scripted. This is not a improvisational style of directing. It's the beats of the script are literally translated into the movie. And so when a character delivers a line of dialogue, it's like the wording is very precise and the delivery is very precise. And it's exactly the way it was written in the script. And I think that kind of adds to the surrealness of the film, because you have basically scenes unfolding that are very intricately scripted, and the actors aren't necessarily doing a ton of emoting. There isn't a lot of broad acting in Wes Anderson movies, unless it's in like the fictionalized setting, like with this movie, with the play. Like there's kind of like there's overacting in those scenes. And then there's moments in the movie where you see that bleed out and it kind of brings the movie to a halt. And then there's almost always like a non sequitur that like pulls you back into the weirdness of it.
Yeah, what is big thing also is the meta. So that's why you have the play and the play there. The play that's supposed to explain to you what's happening. Basically Watchmen, but done better.
Right, right.
You know, for the screen anyway. So, but to be honest, I'm not getting there yet, but we're going to get there yet soon. This is not the best Wes Anderson, but this is one of those that gives you the shape of everything he's going to do after. This is the proto movie. After seeing this now, I just want to go straight to The Royal Tenenbaum. And
I want to go to Zizou. I want to watch, that's my favorite. I want to watch Life Aquatic. Like,
yeah, Shark Tackle has been the same. Just like, let's get Shark Aquatic. Yeah.
You guys really think Bill Murray is acting well in this, though? It's just like he's deadpan on everything.
Yes.
He's got no...
But that's...
That's what the style and what I'm watching ask for. So he's not acting well, Beef. He's like Oscar-nominated acting.
I know it, and it's so weird, because if you watch this and watch like Ghostbusters, you're like, that's not the same guy. Like that, like he is really transforming himself because he's dialing back his shtick, which, you know, Bill Murray is really kind of a broad comic in his delivery and his timing, and you know, the jokes that work well from Bill Murray. This is totally different, and it's interesting in that way for me to see the way that Wes Anderson is able to hold that control. When I think about Wes Anderson movies, I think about attention to detail, and really, like, these movies, the level of preciseness to the way every scene is dressed and designed, and the clothing that the characters wear, and the colors, especially the colors, the way that every shot is blocked, the way that scenes are kind of choreographed and the camera moves, everything is Wes Anderson. And
the lens through the bowl, through the water, through the fish to see on the other side.
Yep. And everything is so precise and detailed that you can't mistake it for any other director. That's really one of the things that, I guess, love or hate Wes Anderson, you have to give him credit for the amount of control that he exerts.
And to be honest, this cast is going exactly as planned, because, as you said, it's love or hate. We know you like Wes Anderson. I like Wes Anderson, but I don't like watching his movie because I don't like cringing. So I love his movies, but they make me uncomfortable. A couple of times during this one, I grabbed my phone to do whatever, just because I'm like,
it's awkward. Yeah,
it's awkward.
Yeah.
So that's the only reason why I don't watch a lot of those, but I love it. But I was like, what is Beef going through right now?
and again, Beef? I think, oh, go ahead, Beef.
I'm here.
What are you going through?
Was there a moment where Beef recognized something in young Max? Was there a moment where you...
I wasn't an overachiever.
But were you an underachiever? Because Max isn't an overachiever either. He sucks at classes, and you know he would rather be in the social sphere, and yet his social skills are also a little not that well developed.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can all kind of relate to that any given week in our youth, give or take. I mean, yes, it is uncomfortable to watch. It's just there's really no point to it, and then you got a deadpan Bill Murray not acting. In my mind, he's doing the exact same thing he always does, just turn the volume down to one. Mm-hmm. It would be like it would be just as jarring if you got Nicolas Cage to play this role. Just don't be all Nicolas Cagey, just be calm.
Yes,
I mean, it's not I
feel like Wes Anderson will get there someday. We'll have Nicolas Cage, and he'll just be like, oh my god.
I'll be honest with you. At this point, for me, this is Bill Murray. Beside Ghostbusters and
Groundhog Day,
for me here, that's pretty much what Bill Murray was. So after that, I got actor Bill Murray, and this is the kind of of deadpan acting that he's able to emote through no emotion at the same time, which is a skill.
If you've seen any interviews with actual Bill Murray, he's a lot closer to this than he is to the Saturday Night Live Bill Murray, which I think was the character that he played for a long time in his films. Yeah. He's in real life, he's a lot closer to this guy.
You're not too partial. You're kind of not too in. Blah, blah, blah. Sorry. You're not really into a Wes Anderson retrospective, if I understand.
Sure. I mean, I think I've heard two of the other movies, but no.
I think we should go there slowly, but I think we should do this.
Once in a while, put one on schedule. Like
once a year.
Yeah,
once a year.
One or two a year I can maybe concede to.
Once a quarter?
No, maybe once a... no, stop.
What about our femme fatale, Olivia Williams?
Poor girl, she's just getting harassed by everyone all along.
She kind of gets her life ruined throughout the film in various ways, plus the constant reminders about her dead husband. And I had forgotten that this was her her role here. I recognize her, I think, the most from Dollhouse.
Yeah.
But this is kind of an interesting part for her.
Well, yeah, who was she in Dollhouse?
The owner of the Dollhouse company. The lady of the place.
Okay, see, 0.5% more interesting now.
Okay,
wasn't she in X-Men 3?
Maybe.
No, I think she was cut.
Anyway,
I'm just going everywhere.
And we also have kind of a supporting cast of kids who I enjoy. And Brian Cox as the school principal. And I love Seymour Cassell as Max's dad.
How random is the Brian Cox shit, too? I mean, I don't know.
You see the Life Aquatic one we were talking about earlier?
Yes.
It's at a point where he has money to get a bunch of actors. So the movies with Kate Blanchett, William Dafoe, Jeff Goldblum, with this kind of acting, Owen Wilson, it's amazing.
Yeah.
For the kind of crazy acting, it's amazing. I still say that Royal Tenenbaum, I prefer this movie because the kind of dysfunctional family works better for me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a preference at that point.
I think I own the Royal Tenenbaums.
Have you watched it?
I think when I was on drugs.
Okay. That
Did you like that?
That could change your feeling.
I know. So well, I don't.
Did you like it? Did you like it when you were on drugs?
I don't remember.
Okay. I mean, I could see how. I think personally, I don't think that Wes Anderson movies would entertain someone who was high, except maybe for like the Fantastic Mr. Fox, because it's like talking animals, because there's so much subtlety in them. It's not like Office Space, if you're high, you can enjoy, because, you know, you can quote the movie. There isn't a lot of plot to follow. In here, it's intricacy, and it really asks you to pay attention. So,
yeah, but you're assuming that when you have that eye, you're trying to follow the story. I think a Wes Anderson movie is perfect because it's a bunch of color of nonsense of things that
I think if
no
you're
sense.
On a hallucinogen or an upper, you're probably good.
Yeah.
If you're on a downer,
yeah,
maybe not. Right.
I was addicted to heroin for a while, so not a good movie.
So yeah, that
probably
makes sense
not
to me.
Then, yeah.
I think if there's still
recommend to not take drugs depending
correct.
On the laws
yes,
in your countries
we are,
or states.
We are
most of my friends died from it, so don't do drugs.
Stick with legal stuff in your area in moderation.
I hear tobacco's good nowadays.
Tobacco's good. There's a man in Ohio who is giving up all food and drink for Lent except for beer, and that
is he going to build a pyramid?
That I can get behind, right?
Wow.
Okay, so Rushmore is a movie that we all watched. Mm-hmm. I think we have said about all we need to say about it.
My favorite joke, and you're going to laugh, but we were talking about a joke that you set up for a while. Like, when he get pissed that Bill Murray is dating the other woman, he, like, Bill Murray takes his bike and roll over it, and half an hour later is going to use that bike...
to fake the accident. Yeah,
these are the kind of joke that gets me way more than, you know, somebody shitting in a sink because they got laxative.
Yeah. Okay.
What is that from?
Bridesmaid.
That was bad Brazilian steak, I believe.
I don't.
Bad chimichurri.
The only thing I remember is that at that point I was like, I'm out.
Yes, I think this film does reward you for paying attention. I love that all of the plays that Max does are basically pastiches of 70s movies. So you had like Serpico, yes. You had the Vietnam movie. It's just so
when
weird.
When you start like Apocalypse Now and you're like, oh, he has money now because he has Bill Murray in his pocket.
Yeah.
So.
Well, all the dynamite that they take, and they just, like, give the kid the crate of dynamite.
Yeah, that was easy. How much money did you are you worth? $10 million? Yeah. We're going to need all of it.
We're going to need all of it.
Wow. Need that kind of friends.
It's good stuff. This is good stuff. Anything else we want to add?
No, I think we're ready to...
All right, Beef, do the honors.
Wing for Rushmore, 1998, technically 1999, somewhere in there. Are you going legendary?
Best play ever, man.
Legend of its time.
I saved Latin. What did you ever do?
Cult legend.
With friends like these, who needs friends?
Awesome.
It's good, but let's hope there's a happy ending.
Entertaining.
I was punched in the face. What's your excuse?
Mayable.
You'll find a pair of safety glasses and some earplugs under your seats. Feel free to use them.
Forgettable.
Sudden death, academic probation.
Abysmal.
99 problems.
Spring Breakers, D&D.
Whichever Wes Anderson movie you don't like. For Beef, that's probably all of them.
With a side of nostalgia, guilty pleasure, tingle, barf, tears.
With a side of Wes Anderson-y stuff, because that's what this movie has.
I'm going to give this one a solid cult legend with a side of Wes Anderson-y stuff, because that's one of the thing I like in his movie, is that I just watch it, I could rewatch it tomorrow and pick up on millions of other things. There's so many different levels at the visual, on the visual plans, on the script level. It's well done, but it's not the best. This one has still some holes. There's still, I think, in the middle of the movie, there's a half hour where I'm like, there's missing some spunk there. There's missing, I don't like that scene where he's drunk. Okay, this is kind of weird to me, as all that's going to be gone by his next movie or something. So this one, I'm going to give it a solid cult legend with everything that you can like of the kind of happiness that a Wes Anderson movie is giving you that no other movie is giving you. All these little stars in every window that you're looking through and stuff like that. I love the eye of that guy. So I just, yeah, just cult legend before we get to the legendary stuff that he's done. Beef?
All right. I would love to say forgettable, but I will not forget this movie. And I, this is something that I think I should like. I mean, I like dry British humor. I like just kind of bland shit, and this just failed to grab me. And I don't know, mayable, because I can't forget it. So you'll find a pair of safety glasses and some earplugs under your seats. Please, I'm going to use them. Lobster.
This one's tough for me, because sometimes I find Wes Anderson to be a little hit or miss. I didn't love The Royal Tenenbaums. I didn't connect with it the way that I kind of connected with The Life Aquatic and Fantastic Mr. Fox. I really didn't care for The Darjeeling Limited. This one falls kind of in between. I did see The Fantastic Mr. Fox, I think, once. I have not seen his more recent films, although I hear they're very, very good. So I would be definitely interested to check those out.
Isle of Dog, you need to see Isle of Dog.
Yeah, it's sitting in my queue. I think most of them are available somewhere streaming his more recent stuff. But Rushmore kind of sits in the middle for me. It is definitely endearing in spots. I think the movie tries very hard to make you not like Max as a character. And I think that's part of the movie is it's about finding his likability in a way. And ultimately what Wes Anderson does a lot of times is he has to destroy everything and then let the characters figure it out, which is really kind of an interesting thing for a director to do. A lot of times a movie will start with the characters in a bad place, and then you see them work their way to a good place, or they'll start in a good place, and then things will go to shit. Wes Anderson tends to set up the characters, give you everything you need to know about them. Through their own issues, they'll kind of destroy things, and then ultimately, it's not necessarily getting back to where they were before, but at least finding some glimpse of salvation or hope or humanity, which is, again, like it's an interesting trick for a director to do, and he does it again and again. So, again, I think this is a movie that is well put together, certainly for its budget. It ended up on the Criterion Collection. It ended up on the National Register of Historic Films. And I think it's because this movie is the blueprint of what Wes Anderson does. And I think if you're going to watch this movie, it's because you've seen what he does, you know what he does, and you want to kind of like see where it all begins. So I would give this a solid entertaining with maybe trending towards awesome. I don't think we're getting quite towards his cult legend, which is probably The Royal Tenenbaums. But it's definitely chock-a-block with Wes Anderson-y stuff in here.
Was he still cult by Royal Tenenbaums? I thought he was almost
mainstream. Well, yeah, I mean, it's tough to say. I feel like Royal Tenenbaums was his mainstream. This one is tough to place. This is definitely the one where he made his biggest name. Most people would probably say this was his first movie. If you stopped them on the street and they knew anything, not a lot of people talk about Bottle Rocket. So,
but the thing with Tenenbaum is that it cost like $20 million and they made like 75. As for Life Aquatic, that cost like what, 50?
Yeah.
They made 20?
Yeah, it wasn't as big of a hit. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's been revered as the most artistic of the two.
Right.
Usually you like one or the other. That's another thing with the...
Sure. No, I get it.
It's people are going to love this shit. Rian Johnson always said that he wants to do movie like Wes Anderson, where half of the public loved them and half of the public hate them. I think he got that right.
I think it's good. I think if you're a director who is uncompromising, that is what you strive for, because people will either get it or they won't.
For only the uncompromising director.
Yeah, but Rian Johnson did that with Star Wars, so that's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
Last word on Rushmore, fellas.
Mount.
Confused.
I was in the shit.
Hyphenated.
Yeah, I was in the shit. Beef, what time is it?
Nose time.
Okay, we have quite a bit to get through. First off, though, we're going to talk about the box office and Captain Marvel.
Who's that?
A shitload of people know who it is now. Like,
yes.
For $500 million worth of people by today.
Worldwide?
Yes, worldwide. Damn. $524 million as of today.
Nice work.
So Captain Marvel ended up... smashing its own studio box office expectations, ended up with the third best March domestic opening weekend, the sixth best worldwide opening weekend, and the seventh highest opening for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It was briefly the number one movie in the world, and then some updated box office numbers for The Wandering Earth came out, but it's still...
Is that still crushing it over there?
It is absolutely still crushing it pretty much everywhere. But Captain Marvel is sitting at number two and will probably end up overtaking again.
Nice. I'm excited to see it for next week. Spoiler alert.
Yes. So there was also this weird thing that happened over the past weekend where basically the people who didn't like Rian Johnson's Star Wars decided that they were going to try to make the hashtag Alita Challenge a thing and get people to go see Alita Battle Angel as opposed to Captain Marvel, to evidently point out something about sexism or some bullshit where people don't respect or like men or something.
Isn't there a woman, ass-kicking woman in Alita?
Having just seen Alita Battle Angel, I kind of don't see the strength of that argument.
Well, one is a fighting fucktoy. The other one is an actual woman having a character. So
that is one is a real doll, and one is an actual badass aviator.
Yeah, after having seen both movies, you know, it's not the same thing at all.
I much prefer the memes that compare Captain Marvel to Dragon Ball Z.
What? I missed that one.
So you have to look. There's a whole bunch of memes that basically are side-by-side shots of Captain Marvel and then Goku going Super Saiyan, or one of the Skrulls with the green guy.
Oh, that's awesome. We were at the movie. The first thing we said was like, oh, Piccolo.
Okay.
The Skrull looks like Piccolo.
And then, basically, if you collect all seven Infinity Stones, you can bring your friends back to life. And then Thanos has the little one-sided hologram glasses and is looking at Captain Marvel and saying, what is her power level?
Oh, my God. That's so true.
Okay.
Wow.
Little bit of sad news to start off. Jeopardy host Alex Trebek recently announced he had been diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, but was going to continue filming Jeopardy. I don't know about you guys, but Alex Trebek has always had a special place in my heart. I'm a big Jeopardy fan.
Suck it, Trebek.
So we are pulling for him for sure.
despite
what Beef just said.
Yeah, it's a movie quote. I don't mean that.
Saturday Night Live, actually.
Oh, God darn it. You know what I meant. Yeah, that's not cool. Why is he still filming? He should just take some time and kick he's, ass and he get is, better, you know?
He's going to do what he loves, man.
True.
That's where he belongs. He is going to...
He did that for years.
True, it's probably more like home than anything.
Yep. He'll die at in this point, if he dies, he'll die in the saddle, I'm telling you, but it's sad. Yeah, speaking
on stage, he's going to drop...
Don't say that.
Yeah. Yep. What is... Oh. Okay. Also sad news, maybe depending on how you feel, Arrow... will end with a shortened season 8 next year on the CW.
What's going to happen on Infinite Crisis? I wonder.
Yeah. So this is kind of something that people have predicted would happen. Obviously, 8 seasons is a good run for any show. Just look at the Netflix superhero shows, the Marvel shows that all got canned after 2 or 3 seasons. But to in terms of what Arrow has done and created this interconnected superhero world on network television, it really is kind of cool.
Arrow is the Iron Man of the DC. Universe. So,
and
it's something that is getting canceled. But if you're telling me Stephen Amell is not going to be Arrow anymore, I've heard that before, and they have so many shows now in which he can just appear, like, what is it with Batgirl, Supergirl,
yep,
Black
absolutely.
Lightning, The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, Alouette, you know?
Yeah, so I think this is something that is due, and when I saw it, I was like, yeah, that makes sense, at least in terms of the stories they've been telling this season, the way the show has kind of shifted its focus towards looking to the future. And with the tease, if you did watch the last crossover, they did kind of set up that this was going to happen.
Yep. And now they're not the only game in town anymore. I mean, when Arrow started, you had that and Agent of Shields. The choice was easy. At this point, I mean, if you don't like these, you can just like watch Titans on TV or Doom Patrol. Doom Patrol's awesome, by the way.
And so, I think quickly Arrow became, and I'm going to take some flack for this, and I'm sorry, it became the least likable show of the universe that it created.
Yep.
Because while I thought Arrow was great, if you told me which I could watch, I would rather watch The Flash or Legends or, you know, whatever. So,
I always watch The Flash when it airs.
Yes.
I always watch Arrow when I have 2 or 3 in a row.
Yeah, right. So again, like, I think this is interesting, but, not surprising. Critical Role, which is it's a Dungeons and Dragons live stream show. So it's basically people, playing D&D, a lot of celebrities, but they have characters and kind of a storyline. They did a crowdfunding campaign to raise just a little bit of money to do an animated special, so basically animating a storyline with their voices. It raised just over $2 million in 4 hours.
Wow.
So that's like insane.
Yeah, that's
wow,
some money.
$4 million. Oh wow, okay.
Yeah. So
okay, this is happening.
So this is gonna be coming to a theater near you, basically. I think it's cool. I've listened to some of the Critical Role stuff. It's long form, so like that, like even if you download the podcast episodes, they're like 2 hours each. But it's cool.
Okay, so Time Bandit is really a big thing. So that they decide to do this, because I don't. When we watched Time Bandit, for me that was like, you know, the movie from the 70s was kind of funny. Now it's gonna be a series by Taika Waititi.
Yes. On the Apple streaming, whatever, who knows? Okay, so I think what the takeaway from this is Taika Waititi is establishing himself as
the guy?
Well, kind of as like the big budget version of Terry Gilliam, where he can do kind of thought-provoking stuff. He can do really insightful comedy. He can also do your Thor Ragnarok or whatever else. I'm excited. I like Time Bandits when we watched it, so.
If it's done good, I'll give it a whirl.
Beef, what happened to Aunt Becky?
She didn't make it.
Oh, no.
I don't know what you're talking about. Who's Aunt Becky?
Okay, so Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin, a.k.a. Aunt Becky from Full House.
Oh, shit, Aunt Becky.
Yes. Among dozens of others have been charged in this college entrance exam scandal where they try to get their entitled yet underachieving children into Ivy League schools. This is kind of an insane story. I'm not the thing that we would talk about here, other than it's just fascinating to me that there's this whole underground world of celebrities that you've heard of basically trying to bribe their children's way into colleges.
It makes sense, though, right? I mean, why wouldn't they?
I mean, I guess they're not doing it very well.
Or they were for a while. I mean... No,
One of the best things I saw, obviously, Felicity Huffman is married to William H. Macy, who's an actor who typically plays sad sack type characters who get embroiled in some sort of nefarious plot, see Fargo and Shameless, et cetera, et cetera. And basically, what I saw was basically William H. Macy gets accused of doing something a William H. Macy character would do.
Yeah.
Big money. Disney has set March 20th, so just a week away, for the closing date for their 21st Century Fox acquisition. There's already a ton of speculation about what this might mean for existing movie and TV properties. It's definitely going to be a game changer.
Well, it's starting next week, so we're going to see what's really going to happen at that point.
Yeah. I think once the ink is dry... we're going to see a lot of changes going forward. Yep. Beef, what's this I hear about a new Orphan Black series?
I am confused as well. Apparently AMC is in talks to have another one, but it's not a reboot and it's set in the same universe. Who can they pick to do anything as close to what Miss Tatiana Awesomeness ever did?
Right. That,
you know, Tatiana Awesomeness was before this.
Nope.
Do the same thing again.
Get somebody who's really good at that thing and do that thing again.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, look at James McAvoy in Glass. He changed on his whim. So why not?
I mean, I think it's interesting. You know, one of the things about Orphan Black is it's super Canadian. And, you know, maybe you go, okay, well, that was the Canadian cloning program. Now let's see what the Americans have been up to. And look at that.
Yeah, we did that with, Torchwood? And I liked it, but not everybody did.
Oh, when they took the British show, or actually Welsh show, I guess, and then moved it to the US of A?
Yeah.
With Torchwood Miracle Day?
Something like that, yeah, that was called. I liked that season. It wasn't the best, but, I mean, it was more Torchwood.
Wasn't that Bill Pullman as the really creepy villain dude?
Yeah.
That was good. That was good stuff.
That was fun.
Okay, I literally screamed when I read this headline. Marvel Studios is developing a what-if TV series for Disney Plus. So if you want to talk about meta, in the comic books, Marvel publishes these one-shot comics called What If that take a key storyline and turn it on its head. So it's always like, what if Spider-Man wasn't bitten by the spider and it was Flash Thompson instead? Or what if Legion killed Magneto instead of Charles Xavier? What would the world look like? And so on and so forth. And what if so-and-so had the power of Thor and whatnot? So the fact that the Marvel brand has now grown to the point, they're like, well, people know these stories well enough. We can now do the what ifs.
That is cool.
That's interesting.
I read it totally differently. I read it like, well, if we do this, we don't have to worry about TV show continuity in our movie universe. That's how they get out of that.
Okay.
Before it was like, there was Netflix stuff, so, well, you know, it's not really the same, even if it is. So
do you think they'd ever do, like, what if Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist were in the Avengers? And
no. No, because you're not going to get What If Iron Man, What If Thor, which is what everybody would like to have. What you're going to get is like, what if Quicksilver was alive?
Oh.
And you're going to have an episode of him and Scarlet Witch, because they already have her on contract for her own TV show.
Do you think it's going to be live action or animated? They haven't said.
It's probably going to be animated.
Yeah.
Now that you're talking about it.
I mean, you could do a lot more. You could do a lot more, which would be interesting. So
yeah, because there you can recast the voice, and who cares if it's not Mark Ruffalo doing the Hulk?
Right.
And that's what you're interested.
Okay. What if Marvel's Shang-Chi hired director Destin Daniel Cretton for its movie?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Awesome. That is our news roundup. Let's move over to trailers. Okay.
Oh, God. There was a shitload of trailers.
We had a shitload of trailers this week, starting things off with a couple of comedies. We had Booksmart.
Yeah. Looks like shit. Nope.
I don't know.
I thought this looked great.
I don't know high school from a girl's side, but there were a handful of giggles in there. I was never the overachiever, but.
I think this is kind of interesting because it's the overachievers realize they've, you know, they've won high school, they've gotten into their dream colleges, so they're going to close it out with one night of debauchery.
It's
I think
the female Superbad.
Yeah, it works. It works for me.
You didn't like Superbad, so you're not selling it to me at all.
You're not McLovin on that movie?
I wasn't trying to,
bro. Okay. This next one, Late Night with Emma Thompson, Mindy Kaling.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I didn't care for this, the look of this one either, but
that next one was creepy as hell, though,
okay,
because
Framing John DeLorean.
Dude, he looks like DeLorean.
He does look like DeLorean. So Alec Baldwin, and this is a really interesting project because it's part documentary, part
reality, like movie.
Dramatization. But also like very meta, and they work in obviously references to Back to the Future and the criminal trial of John DeLorean, and
this'll be
the fallout, interviews with his family members. Like, I think this is gonna be cool.
Is this a series or is this a movie?
I believe that it's a movie. Yeah.
Nice.
Something that is a series is Good Omens.
Now what's this about?
Yeah.
What is it about, you guys? This is Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett doing a buddy comedy with an angel and a demon trying to find the Antichrist and either start or prevent Armageddon.
So Dogma.
Yes, but British.
Okay. British Dogma.
I don't think I've ever watched all of Dogma.
Whoa.
Put it on the list. Gina Rodriguez in Someone Great, a romantic comedy-ish, also Friends
kinda,
comedy.
Maybe.
Okay. All right. From the director of Hereditary, Midsommar.
Entirely too many white people in this trailer. I was creeped out.
Set in Scandinavia, so that makes sense, right?
Yeah, but it's. I mean, it's very clearly right away, you know, it's cult-ish. You know, everyone's got flowers in their hair, and they're drinking the Kool-Aid, and I don't know if I can do this.
Okay,
maybe, but I would not.
Wayne,
go to
what
a
was
theater.
Your, what was your reaction to this?
I'm sorry, I'm just mixed with between two, so I was rewatching it. But
we're
talking about the Midsommar.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm looking at this. It seems to be very Wes Anderson-y.
Yeah, it's like The Village if everyone wears white and something creepy is happening, but we're not sure what.
That's the movie. That's the trailer that I thought you put there just because we were doing a Wes Anderson movie. Okay, now I remember correctly this one.
Okay.
I'm kind of excited because it looks curious.
Cult-like. We've all been to IKEA, right? I mean, you go to IKEA and you love their furniture and everything, but you also kind of pick up on a weird, creepy vibe somewhere in there. I think this is just the movie of that.
It's all rune stones yeah, and sacrifices. Right? Yeah, I
don't. Sure.
There's a movie called Midsummer, which was from the 60s or the 70s, which was done in one shot, and yeah, it looks a lot like this.
Yeah, this is kind of like Wicker Man, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's something. Okay. A much longer, more detailed trailer for Tolkien.
Don't care at all about that. That seems to be so romanticized that who cares?
I don't know. I'm kind of into it.
Okay.
I really don't have much care for, I almost said Game of Thrones, for Lord of the Rings, but this is, I don't know, it seems interesting to me. Whether I go see it or not, I think it'd be fun to see how romanticized or how much they actually weave some of his actual thoughts into it.
I don't know. The trailers look so cool, and it, based on what I know about Tolkien's life, like, it seems like they're working in basically the angles that kind of matter. His experience in war, his love of language, yeah, his friendship. Really kind of interesting for me. All right, so okay, if you want
to... Every week I get to this list, and there's only on one or two thing that I miss, because I like watching trailers during the week,
okay,
and you're doing a great job to finding shit that I don't. I had to double take on that one.
Doom Annihilation.
How didn't we know that was in production?
Okay, there's so
alien, like, nine-part animated thing that follows Ellen Ripley's The Daughter or whatever.
Yeah.
It's already out and animated. Right. So go on.
Before we get off topic with that, so if you ask anyone, so I put like 10 trailers up for tonight. If you ask anyone what the most divisive trailer of the week is, or the most hated trailer of the week, it is called Doom Annihilation. Basically, the video game studio has disowned this trailer, the studio behind making Doom the game. The reason why we haven't heard of this movie is it looks like it was shot in someone's basement.
It does.
And edited by someone who flunked out of film school. And why even is this necessary? Like, what is Universal thinking behind saying, okay, we're going to make this Doom movie in the most... I mean, this looks like someone dug it out of the back of their closet from 2001.
If this,
it seems like they did a sequel from The Rock. They're just like swunk.
If it drops,
direct to video sequel.
Yeah, if it drops on Netflix, I will be all in with popcorn and my feet up and a cat on my lap, because this is like the stupid Saturday morning or afternoon crap that I would watch, but it's not. I will not pay to go see this.
There's even a weird reference in the in the title cards where they're like, "This isn't a game.
Right, it's not a game anymore.
No one has played Doom in a decade. I guarantee."
No,
they redid one.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just back you off because we're actually waiting for Doom 2 to be announced, and everybody is very eager because the remake of the first one, which is actually playable on Switch,
is
amazing.
So that was
just amazing.
Do people play that, or do they play Overwatch or Fortnite or?
In comparison, a lot of people did play Doom for the kind of market that it is. Yes. If we're talking about last year Call of Duty market, yes, it was a big game.
Okay.
Of course, you're talking a gaming market. It changed every 9 months. 9 months later, we're in a different market, but we're still expecting Doom 2 and a version of Battle Royale of Doom 2. So it's still super relevant. That's why I had to double take on this, because I'm looking at this bullshit and I'm like, your brand right now is getting back on track and you're going to pull this House of the Dead U-Bowl crap?
I think that's why the game studio disowned it very, very quickly.
They had some... Go ahead.
And said they had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, someone had some Space Marine Cody fingers, plastic armor laying around, and some prosthetics, and said we could shoot this in that abandoned warehouse, and they did it.
Basically, but seriously, if you guys heard of Doom for the first time in a while, go check the one from last year. It's like $35 now.
Yeah, okay.
It's great. The storyline is great. Can you believe that? It's nuts.
All right. So the Fresh long-awaited Prince. Full trailer to The Fresh Prince of Agrabah. I mean, Aladdin.
I'm ready. Sure, I'm just whatever. Afraid of the Aladdin part.
Hey, I watched Beauty and the Beast at home. I didn't even go to the movie theater. So that's going to be the same thing, I guess, because I would need to see that train wreck. And I love the Pink Ranger. So
I mean, Disney is setting up Dumbo, Aladdin, and The Lion King in pretty quick succession.
Plus, they've good, though.
Plus, they've got like Frozen, Star Wars, Avengers, Spider-Man, Maleficent 2, apparently.
What?
Like Toy Story 4. They're basically owning every month this year, which, well, starting with Captain Marvel and everything else, like.
Well, there's basically four studios these days. So
right.
If you're not,
and they're all and they're all Disney.
Yeah, there you go. You have like Disney, you have Sony, you have Warner, and you have everybody else. You know, that's basically what exists. But the everybody else is like nobody these days. It's nuts. So
okay, but the everybody else also includes our last trailer for the night, Brightburn.
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Oh my God.
Okay, Beef, what are you excited for?
Until we get a red sun, this is, it's not, but it is. I don't know. It's another take on Superman. He's fucked up. He's messed up, and it's going to be entertaining to see him without the limiters on, if you will.
We like our Chronicles.
Yeah.
That's basically, I saw this and I was excited. I was like, why am I, we like our Chronicles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically another pitch of, okay, let's take something that, like you said, a red sun that exists. Let's remove the licensing of it and make it a little bit fucked up. Give it some style, because the trailer seems to have some style. I hope the movie does have some, but give it some style and put what that cost, what, $10 million by the look of it?
Oh, sure, yeah.
So that costs nothing. It's going to make 25, so.
I mean, it's a Memorial Day release, and I think it's up against Aladdin, so.
That's great counter-programming.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Wow, okay. Somebody was brilliant at Sony for that weekend. Okay.
I think this looks interesting. I like that the second trailer gives us a little bit more of the story. So you have basically young Clark Kent is bullied. He's a little bit maladjusted.
Right.
And this kind of really weird thing where, like, no one ever really talked about how Clark Kent grew up to be, you know, just happy and want to
very
help people.
Well,
yeah, and when in fact, like, he's from an alien planet, and you know, the people that raised him are not his parents, and he is not like them. And on a fundamental level, how does he find his humanity? So
I want to know what he does to that chick's arm. Does he like freeze it off and it shatters or something?
No, I think he just squeezes her bones into powder inside her hand. And that
could be worse.
Could be worse. He could use his heat vision, or I don't know why they needed the shot with the light stabbing in the lady's eye. Like, I thought that, you know, they can do creepy enough stuff without.
Oh, the glass that one. Or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a little. That was a bit on the nose.
I think they could do some other stuff, like using his powers, like you said. Like he clearly has heat vision. So what can he do with it?
Yeah, but I think you're right. He probably just crushed her hand. He didn't break his powers out. Otherwise, they'd be a lot more freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree.
I did like the scene where he sticks his hand in the lawnmower.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa. All right, so ton of trailers. Always, 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 we have stuff to talk about. So
the show.
This is good.
And speaking of talking, next week, Legends Podcast. Marvel, Captain Marvel, or something. That should be
yes.
good. I'm excited.
So once again, we all went to the movies, and we're going to talk about...
I haven't yet.
Very...
Don't spoil
me. Okay. We're going to talk about a very recent release. I saw
Stay
it...
Stay until the very end.
Yes.
Very, 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 when they open the lights.
Very, very end. Yes. In fact,
shit.
When the people come in for the next movie, don't go anywhere. Just stay in your seat.
Hey, this guy's going for a twofer. Tackle him.
Watch it again. Yeah, this is good.
Yeah, I'm the guy at a theater where people were like, is there something like, yeah, sit down, sit down. There's something, it's not done. And they're like, oh, thanks.
Also, this is semi-spoilerish, but stick some tissues in your pocket, and you will need them in the first 30 seconds.
Spoilers. This has been episode...
Yes.
This has been episode 413 of Legends Podcast. I'm Beef saying, I hate people on the internet with spoilers too.
And John D saying, you should watch Mallrat, man.
And I'm Lobster saying, I didn't tell you what the tissues were for.
No, not you guys.
She's my Rushmore.
I don't want to know what you do with your tissues.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to leave us feedback, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Legends Podcast. For all our contact information, as well as other shows, look to GunnaGeek.com and KrakenCast.com. You can also visit LegendsPodcast.Lipson.com, where you'll find our complete archives. The music heard on this podcast is Danger Storm by Kevin MacLeod and can be found at Incomputech.com. The opinions heard on this podcast are those of each individual host and do not represent Legend Stream Canada, GunnaGeek, or KrakenCast. No infringement is intended.